Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender in for Neil Stavem today. Well, as you know, this show, Connecting Faith, is here to discuss issues of the day, to offer a biblical worldview to those issues. And one of those recurring topics, of course, in the media today is the legalization of same-sex marriage. So, well, a lot of the research and debate has been focused on what does the Bible say about homosexuality, or what do we believe as followers of Christ. For today, I thought we should look at maybe a different question, and that question is this. How do we honor those beliefs when interacting with and engaging with someone who does not share that Christian worldview, or someone who does not agree on this particular issue? How do we interact with them in a way that is still grace-filled, yet offering truth at the same time? How do we stay faithful to the teaching of Scripture and yet live in this world with men and women who identify themselves as lesbian, gay, transgendered, or bisexual, and still have great conversations and good relationships with our neighbors? Well, if you haven't faced this question yet, perhaps you will in the coming years or months or weeks. So how do we respond? Well, on today's show, author and family researcher Glenn Stanton joins us to discuss his new book, Loving My LGBT Neighbor, Being Friends in Grace and Truth. And I thought that was just the perfect book to discuss this topic today. Let me tell you a little bit more about Glenn, and we'll get him on the show. Glenn Stanton is the director for Family Formation Studies at Focus on the Family. He speaks at universities and churches throughout the world on issues of gender and sexuality. Glenn has authored and contributed to numerous books on these subjects, including The Ring Makes All the Difference and The Family Project. You can learn more about him at focusonthefamily.com. Welcome, Glenn.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you here, and this is kind of a hot topic, of course, in the media and certainly in the circles on our radio station, and it just seems like we need to have a conversation about how do we as Christ followers stay faithful to that teaching of Scripture but live in this world that we live in and have conversations with people who may be LGBT. How do we do that, Glenn?
Well, I mean, that's a big, big question. And, you know, all the way back to, you know, Paul and the apostles and the early Christians had to deal with that. I mean, living in a very different and often hostile culture, and this being such a big issue, and it really hitting home to so many families and individuals at work and things like that, it's very important that we walk this balance between grace and truth. John 1:14 tells us that Jesus came to dwell among us and that he was full of grace and truth. Full, I mean, that's an absolute term. You can't be kind of full or a little full, but full of grace, accepting, receiving, loving other people, but also full of truth as well. I mean, not compromising on issues, not compromising on sin. And we as Christians are called to live in the balance and the tension of both of those things. And, you know, people will ask, well, which one is more important? And the answer is yes. You know, we've got to make sure that both of those are balanced one against the other.
So grace will often say, well, we should just ignore our differences and get along. But truth might often say absolute condemnation. So how do you find this balance that we need to live in?
Well, see, and those are the two misunderstandings of, and you're playing the advocate there. Those are the two misunderstandings of grace and truth, and that, you know, well, grace is absolute, uncritical, you know, acceptance. No, grace is really, here's how I say it. We treat the person themselves with grace. We're kind to them. We're gracious to them. God treats us with grace. Mm-hmm. But we treat the issues themselves in truth. You know what? Here's what God said. And, you know, there are all kinds of restrictions upon everybody, heterosexual and homosexual, on sexual ethics. And God cannot compromise on those things. And then neither can we if we seek to be obedient to him. So always dealing with the person in front of us graciously in grace. But that grace is tempered and illuminated, if you will, by the truth that we have to remain faithful to, the truth of the issue itself. And I think keeping those two things in mind doesn't make it easy necessarily, but it can be a good guide for us.
Well, and it seems like it's a constant effort on our part to say I disagree with you, but not to have someone then say, well, because you disagree with me, I hate you. And
it seems like
that happens a lot.
It happens so often, and I try to be patient, I try to be kind, I try to be gracious, but I do not put up with that at all because it's so manipulative. I mean, think about any other issue where if you disagree with me, then you hate me, or if you disagree with me, then you reject me. We don't do that on abortion. We don't do that on – I mean, there is no issue. And to – I mean, it's just bottom line. Guess what? I can disagree with you and still love you, you know? And if you're going to put it back in my face that to disagree with you or to reject – homosexuality is to reject you as a person, that's just irrational. And, you know, to kindly, and that this is the grace and truth thing, to kindly not tolerate that, not put up with that.
Mm. Well, and that does seem to be, it's like a standstill where the conversation can't start because it seems to be starting from such a defensive position on either side, and that makes it hard to voice your opinion, and it also makes it difficult to get to that second part where you get to explain yourself.
Exactly. And that's another thing to say is, you know, listen, if I'm not going to be able to disagree with you without you assuming that I hate you, then you've cut off the conversation right there. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, put it back on them, and that's, again, grace sometimes is just being honest, you know, and truth is being honest as well. Another thing that I like to equate it to, and I just answered a letter this morning, somebody asking me this question, is put it in terms of cohabitation, heterosexual cohabitation. You know what? If you were cohabiting, I couldn't accept that relationship. I would have to say that that's wrong. And that's especially true of us as parents dealing with our same-sex identified children. You know what? It's not your homosexuality per se that I have a problem with. It's that you are contradictory to God's ethic of sexuality, and that's true for cohabitation and things like that. And that helps the other person realize, okay, it's not just about me and my homosexuality. It's about the issue of this contradicting what God says. And so that can tend, I mean, equating it to cohabitation or something like that, it can tend to diffuse the issue.
So talk about just what is the orthodox biblical view of sexuality and sexual relations so we can lay that out and then we can talk more about it.
Yeah, and I deal with that in the book in chapter 2, and that's very, very important that we need to always ask. I mean, you know, in a way, don't get so caught up in the issue of homosexuality itself, but say, what is God's ethic? What are God's boundaries and rules and guidelines on sexuality? And clearly, Jesus himself in Matthew 19 and Mark 10 talks about marriage relationships and sexual relationships, and he says, he refers back to Genesis, and he says, you know, God created male and female, and he made them to come together in marriage as one flesh. The husband leaves his mother and father and cleaves to his wife. That is the sexual ethic. There is no sexual relationship that God approves of outside of the relationship between a husband and wife, just flat out. And that puts limitations and makes life difficult, if you will, for everybody, you know, who is not married, gay, straight, whatever. And those qualifications, those requirements apply to every one of us. So that's essentially it, is within the marital relationship between a husband and wife, that's the only place that sexual relationships can happen. And then, of course, within that relationship, it be a relationship of mutual respect and care and dignity, you know, one for the other, you know, in terms of, you know, sex being, you know, a chore, a task that the wife performs for the husband. The husband needs to be respectful of the wife and the wife to the husband as well.
So I wrote down one quote that is along the subject as well that you wrote it from your book. It says, marriage is not a human right because society needs marriage anthropologically. There are compelling social and civic reasons for marriage to be defined one way rather than the other. Can you speak a little bit to that? What are the benefits of marriage, and what are the benefits to it being defined as a union between a man and a woman?
Well, and that's a good question. It's an important question. Many times, you know, people will say, well, it's just your religious conviction that makes you oppose same-sex marriage. And that's just not true. If you look at secular anthropologists who study, and this is fascinating to me because they do, they go all around the world in all kinds of developed and developing nations and observe the relationships between men and women and how they bear children and things like that. And every culture has something that we would define and recognize as marriage. They call it permanent pair bonding, you know, that a man and a woman commit themselves to one another exclusively. That takes each of them off the sexual market, if you will, the out of the sexual marketplace. And they have, this is what the anthropologists say, it regulates sexuality. It says that you have access to her, she has access to you, and that the children that come forth from your relationship belong to you. I mean, that's where we get the word legitimized or illegitimate children. It's not a moral term. It just says this child belongs to this mother and father, and we know what their lineage is, and we know who's, you know, responsible to take care of them. And so marriage does four things, basically. It regulates sexuality. It you know, keeps us from, you know, kind of sexual anarchy and sexual madness. And we see, as marriage has declined, that kind of madness has increased in, you know, most Western nations. It also socializes men. I mean, you look at even insurance companies. Men who are married pay lower insurance premiums than men who are not married. And that's not because the insurance company likes married men. They know that married men are safer, they're healthier, they are more likely to settle down and work hard and things like that. Single men don't do that as much. The third thing that it does is it protects women. Women who are connected with the man that they are married to are less likely to become sexual objects. They're less likely to be abused because the man is more likely to protect her. And then fourth, it legitimizes or gives and guarantees children access and care and love by their mother and father. So marriage universally, humanly does those four things. And every society needs those four things to happen. And that's why marriage appears in every single human culture, from a secular perspective. But of course, we know as Christians that, no, God wired us as humans that way. It is not good for man to be alone. And that's not just a quaint little Sunday school statement. That is a deep statement about what God created us to be as relational creatures.
Well, talking to Glenn Stanton today, he is the Global Family Formation Studies Director at Focus on the Family. Can we disagree on certain convictions like same-sex marriage and still get along? We're going to talk to Glenn more when we come back on Connecting Faith on his book, Loving My LGBT Neighbor. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us on this afternoon. Talking to the Director for Global Family Formation Studies at Focus on the Family, Glenn Stanton. He speaks at universities and churches throughout the world on issues of gender and sexuality, as well as sociology and anthropology of marriage, which we were just talking about before the break there. So, Glenn, I've read a lot of comments, heard some interviews as well, that Christians just need to evolve on this issue. In fact, I've heard same-sex marriage compared to slavery even on many occasions, and that we just haven't evolved yet on the right way of thinking. How do you respond to that?
You know, and that's a great, great question, and we hear that all the time. And that's another thing that, you know, I don't have a whole lot of patience for in terms of when I hear that from people, because one, it's manipulative. It's manipulative. I mean, who wants to believe the earth is flat? You know, who wants to be those kinds of people? And that's exactly what's behind that kind of question or statement. It's the other thing of, well, don't you want to be on the right side of history? You know, it's just silly. The issue of slavery, and, you know, they'll talk about, well, you know, the church was wrong on the issue of women and slavery, and, you know, it you know, finally got a clue there. And why can't you do that on homosexuality and things like that? But the thing you need to understand, that we need to understand, is that in a sense, in the New Testament, Jesus and the apostles, they were opening up the idea of, you know, there's neither Greek, you know, slave nor free, man or woman, things like that, that he was opening up those things, that, you know, slavery, you know, would go away, that women are equal to men and things like that. But Jesus, in sexuality, made things narrower. He said, look at the man who, you know, looks upon a woman with lust in his heart. It is just as if he committed adultery with her. He is not opening things up like he did with slavery and who the slave is and who the woman is, but he narrowed things on sexuality. He gave us a narrower, more tight and inflexible, if you will, sexual ethic. And so, you know, we can't say, well, then the church should open itself up to homosexuality. No, Jesus didn't do that. And as Christians, you know, Jesus is who we follow. Jesus is who we get our clues from. And that's very important for Christians to understand.
So how is the church as a whole doing? Is it getting it right? Is it applies to answering the call of culture to redefine marriage and to redefine family? How is the church doing on that?
You know what? To be quite honest, and I can be very critical of the church as a member of the church, but I think the church is really doing quite well. I mean, we hear a lot of Christians who will say, oh, yes, the church has a lot to apologize for on the gay and lesbian issue. I just don't find that to be true. I mean, let me demonstrate that this way. Find the most conservative church, you know, of old grandmas and grandpas, you know, who, you know, they're still singing hymns and, you know, things like that. If a gay or lesbian individual comes into that church and says, hey, I'm a gay individual, I'm a lesbian, I saw your church, I just wanted to come in and kind of see what was going on here, could I attend some services? Would you allow that? There is, I mean, I would dare say no church or extremely few churches that would say, did you say you're gay? You're going to have to leave. Hmm. You know, they may be anxious. They may be nervous. Just like if, you know, a motorcycle gang guy comes in, you know, they're going to say, you know what, we are so glad that you're here. Let me introduce you to such and such. And, you know, I mean, they would be treated very, very well and received and accepted. And that's what I find with most Christians, even with Christian parents whose kids come out to them. Now, this is very important. The parents may not react, you know, completely like their kids would want them to in terms of being accepting and receiving. But we need to understand this, that the gay or lesbian person typically goes through years of struggle to come to terms with their feelings, their sexual attraction, things like that. But when they give this news to their parents or their family, they expect the family to just be fine with it, you know, as it's announced. And they themselves didn't come to terms with it that quickly. So it's really unfair to turn around and, you know, with something that you struggled with, expect your parents or your friends or your family just to get it and be at peace with it immediately. You've got to give them the process to deal with it and struggle through it. And I really do think, I mean, there are problems and there are examples of Christians who are just not very nice. But for the most part, I think they do pretty well. We can do better, and we should do better. But for the most part, we do pretty well, I think.
Well, should Christians and LGBT persons strive to adopt this more neutral ground so that sharing and understanding can occur from both sides? Or do you think that's even possible?
It's not really possible because it's not being true to yourself in a sense. I mean, we shouldn't seek neutral ground, but we should seek understanding. I mean, even that sounds like a little, you know, kumbaya-ish, but, you know, we should understand one another. You know, when we're out sharing the gospel even, it's like, you know, John Stott and some others say we should be better listeners than we are speakers. And you know what? Listen to the other person. Hear their story. Understand where they're coming from. You don't have to agree with it, whether they're an atheist, whether they're, you know, an existentialist, whether they're a New Ager or a gay and lesbian individual. But it is important to hear their story and try to understand where they're coming from. And to realize and to say, you know what, I don't agree with you, but I would like to be your friend. And I bet you're not going to agree with me, but I would like for you to be my friend. And then, like we do in all relationships, I love this, you sit around the Thanksgiving table with your family, you know, and Uncle Bob, he's the, you know, crazy, you know, liberal Democratic guy, you know, and he's spouting off about this or that, or you're the crazy conservative and you're going to town on this or, you know, you're disagreeing, you're fighting with one another, but your family, you're committed to one another, and we can do that with our friendships as well.
I remember sitting down and having a conversation, several conversations with my friend who is on the opposite side as I am politically, and we had a great conversation on why we believe what we believe, how those beliefs came into being, what experiences we've had, and we just had a very nice conversation, and at the end of it we said, we should write a book on how you can get along, even though you disagree, on some very fundamental ways that you believe government should act and work. And I feel like that is similar to what we're talking about today, that if we can get beyond that point where you say, well, you disagree with me, so you must hate me, so I hate you, that we could actually begin to understand what it meant when Jesus said to love your neighbor, because there are so many different instances where you're not going to agree with people, whether it's politics, whether it's same-sex marriage, whether it's homosexuality. There are so many bigger and smaller issues for us to talk about, but we need to be talking about them.
And that's exactly right. And your example, I mean, is beautiful. And that needs to happen, is to say, we disagree, and we can disagree passionately, but we can also disagree civilly. And I think even, this is very important for an advocate of any position, you ought to be able to articulate the belief and conviction of the person you disagree with in order to really understand your position. And we do need to listen to each other and understand what we're saying, not agree, but understand and know what motivates the other person.
Great conversation today with Glenn Stanton. He is an author and speaker and director of the Family Research Studies at Focus on the Family. We'll be back with Connecting Faith in just a moment. Faith, thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm Joe Bender in for Neil Stavem today. And today we are talking with Glenn Stanton, who is the director of Global Family Formation Studies. It's a long title, Glenn, for Focus on the Family. And he has written a new book called Loving My LGBT Neighbor, Being Friends in Grace and Truth. We've been chatting a bit about that question. How do we as Christ followers stay faithful to the teaching of Scripture and yet live in this world where men and women who identify themselves as lesbian lesbian, gay, transgendered, or bisexual are going to be our friends? And how do we have conversations to be able to understand each other and not be able to waver on our Christian convictions at the same time? Well, we do have actually a few books of Glenn's to give away. So if you are listening today, you want more on this subject and you'd like to read some for yourself, you can give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Got a nice stack of books of Loving My LGBT Neighbor. We also have a few of Glenn's books that it's called Secure Daughters, Confident Sons, How Parents Guide Their Children into Authentic Masculinity and Femininity. We have a couple of those as well, and that's a great book. I've just loved reading that as a parent. So if you have a question or comment that you'd like to give to this show or ask Glenn, you can certainly give us a call as well, 877-933-2484. So Glenn, we've been talking a little bit about how to have conversations. There's also another question I have, which is, are there churches and Christians who've handled various relationships and questions with love and grace, both inside and outside of the faith? Is there a church or a Christian organization that you can point to that's really done a particularly good job with this that we could maybe aspire to?
Yeah, I think one of the most powerful things when we're, you know, trying to figure out how to do something is find people who have done it well and sort of emulate them and follow them. And on this one, it is that balance of grace and truth. I mean, there are unfortunately too many Christian organizations and too many Christian leaders that get the grace thing, you know, if you will, a little too right. They lean too far over on that way. But then you've got organizations that, you know, emphasize the truth thing, which is important, but minus the grace part of it. And there are organizations. There are a lot of different churches that do that. I mean, for instance, and I've been able to interact with him a little bit personally, and I've heard him give talks, is Rick Warren does a very, very nice job of that. He takes a very strong line. And, I mean, one of his things is, you know, I'm not going to compromise on this issue because I fear God more than I fear man. But he's able to speak very graciously to individuals. And that's, you know, what I talk about in the book. Deal with people, the person in front of you, with grace, but deal with the issue itself in truth. I think, you know, to be honest with you, I think Focus on the Family does very well at that in terms of standing for truth and helping, you know, the church understand clarity there, but also being gracious to individuals. I think Dr. Dobson did that very well, and I think Jim Daly does that very well, as a number of other people here. Alliance Defending Freedom, which is a legal organization down in Phoenix that, you know, really defends people who are, you know, being mistreated and abused on this issue legally, they do a very, very good job of standing for truth, but also being kind to the people, the opponents, if you will, that they interact with.
So one of the ways that, or one of the things that seem to be coming up a little bit more, of course, as marriage is legalized in many different states, is whether or not a believer, a Christ follower, can and should attend a gay wedding. You have a section in your book on that subject. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah. Now, that is a tough question, and I would dare say that, in a sense, there is not a scriptural answer per se. But what I say is there are guidelines and there are directions there. And for people who say, you know what, I could never attend a gay wedding, and I have friends like that, I have to honor that and I have to respect that. However, there are very rare situations where I might attend one, as surprising as that might be. And I would do it with great trouble, but it comes down to this. It depends on who the person is. You know, if it's Frank in accounting at work and he wants you to come, that's one thing. If it's your own child, that's another. I mean, you're going to evaluate those two things differently. The line that I really draw is, I would never go to a gay wedding that was celebrated under the auspices of Christianity by a pastor, by a priest, in a church, anything like that. Even you know, if it were like a super liberal denomination, you can't bring the authority of Christ and the mantle of the church upon something like that. Now, I have, you know, two or three friends that are secular gay individuals. If they were to marry, I might consider going to that wedding, not to, you know, endorse it. They know how I feel about this kind of stuff. But I would go, as hard as it is for me to come here, I'm here for you. I know this day is important for you, and I want to be here with you. Now, again, they know how I feel. I fight with them constantly about this. But that would be a sign of grace to them that, wow, you know, Glenn did that. And again, they wouldn't think, you know, that I've changed my position. But then there's others, and I think this is a good rule of thumb as well, is, you know what, I couldn't go to the wedding, but I may go to the reception. And I could possibly do that. And all this to say is there are different answers for different people given their convictions. Again, I would say straight out that there's no way that you could attend such a wedding that it represents, if you will, you know, something from the church. But others you possibly could consider going to if you know, if you seem that that's fine with you based on the relationship. And it would have to be somebody that you really, really, really deeply care for. That is a child, a family member, or, you know, even a dear, dear friend. But, you know, I would be willing to say, you know, people who disagree with me on that, you know what, I honor that. And this is a tricky one, but those are my guidelines.
Well, that question, along with many other, toward the back of the book, you have a section that says four fundamental questions, and it's worth the price of the book, in my opinion. And one of those says, should I support or oppose gay rights? And you say, as Christians, the answer is that we must oppose them as stated and for reasons that affirm our LGBT neighbors. Can you explain that a little bit, how we can try to understand that as Christ followers?
Well, first of all, it's how things are phrased, and mm-hmm. I hate, and I say that, you know, tongue in cheek, but I hate, you know, the phrases marriage equality or gay rights, as if you don't support them, then you don't, you know, respect the rights of other human beings. Just say, first of all, you know what, I'm not going to have the conversation on that level. You know, do you believe in marriage equality? No, I am absolutely against all forms of equality. No, it's, am I against marriage redefinition? You know, absolutely. And so don't always, you know, let the other person define the terms. You get in there as well. And the issue is, no, we can't support gay rights, because that is actually contrary to the idea of rights. We support human rights. You know, you as a human have as many rights as I do, no more, no less. We don't have, you know, Hispanic rights. We don't have Italian rights. We don't have, you know, vegetarian rights. We have human rights. And if you're asking me to give you and extend you rights based on something particular about you, then that is exceptionalism, for good and for bad. It's saying that you have rights because of something particular about you rather than just your sheer humanity. And so actually that position takes human rights more seriously than it does the other person. And I think that's very important.
Love that. And that actually sounds very much like what Jesus would say as far as not having exceptionalism. He
exactly.
Absolutely did not support that, as we read about what he said and how he said it.
And it was revolutionary mm-hmm. to say that, you know, the Samaritan matters because he's a human being, mm-hmm. not because he's a Samaritan or not a Samaritan, that human beings matter because every one of them bear the image of God. But then Jesus also said, you know, to the woman at the well, go and sin no more. And, you know, he told the Pharisees, you guys are wrong. You know, so he called people out when they're wrong, but he respected them as human beings. And again, as Christians, we are Christ ones. We are followers of him, and we can't, you know, redefine the character of what it means to be a Christian for good or for bad. More grace, more truth. It needs to be both of those. Mm.
One of the other questions in this same section, I've heard this question many times as well. Shouldn't our religious beliefs be kept separate from our community values? How do you respond to that? I hear that a lot.
Well, to be honest, you know, and this is not judgmental on the other person, but that is really, if you think about it, a very, I want to say ignorant, but I don't want to be ugly there. It just is.
Misinformed.
You know, if it is misinformed, exactly, because if the church were to go away and not be involved in society, you wouldn't have hospitals, you wouldn't have soup kitchens, you wouldn't have the Salvation Army, you wouldn't have, you know, substance abuse treatment centers. You know, and it's kind of interesting in that they'll say, well, no, that's fine for the church to do. It's just this busybody moralism over here. Well, you know, you can't pick and choose. The church is the church. And basically that means that you as a citizen have to leave your faith at the door if you want to be involved in public life. No. That's what makes America great, is all kinds of different people with all kinds of different beliefs get to participate in this thing called democracy. That's what makes democracy so wonderful. And then on the issue of marriage, I mean, they'll say, well, let's let you have your religious view of marriage and let us have our, you know, public secular view of marriage. And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier is – marriage is a human institution. It's not a Christian institution per se, simply because God gave it to all human beings. If marriage were just a Christian institution, it would only be 2,000 years old, and it would only exist in those places where missionaries have gone and had influence. But it exists everywhere. It's what the theologians call a common grace. It's like water. God made us to need water, and he gave it to everybody. And when we don't have it, troubles develop. It's the same thing for marriage. He made us for marriage. We need marriage, and every society practices it. And when it goes away, bad things happen.
Mm. We're talking to author, speaker, and researcher Glenn Stanton. He is the director of Global Family Formation Studies at Focus on the Family and has written a book called Loving My LGBT Neighbor, Being Friends in Grace and Truth. We still have a couple of books to give away. If you would like to, give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. And we'll try to get that in your hands. Or maybe you have someone who would like to have that in their hands and you can get that to them. Well, we'd be happy to do that as well. If you have a question or comment you'd like to contribute to our show, we will take that at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks so much for joining us today, talking to author Glenn Stanton about his book, Loving My LGBT Neighbor, Being Friends in Grace and Truth. And Glenn, one of the other projects that I know you've been involved with is called The Family Project over at Focus on the Family, on why families work. Can you tell me a little bit more about that project and why that's near and dear to your heart?
Yeah, that was a big, big project, and it's just early in the launch phase here, and it's very similar to the Truth Project, if any listeners are familiar with that. But basically what it is, it's a DVD curriculum, and we have a companion study book and then larger book that goes along with it. And it is essentially a worldview on family, parenting, sexuality, that starts out looking at what God's design is and really looking at who God is and who we are. And then out of that, why did God make us as sexual creatures? Why did he put us in families? Why does he give us marriage? And it goes through 12 sessions to explore that in, you know, again, the overarching kind of Christian worldview, but also in very practical ways as well. It's different than the Truth Project in that it's not one person teaching, but we have Tim Sisrich, who runs our Focus New Zealand office. He travels the world and talks to all kinds of authorities, secular and Christian, to understand why it is that marriage matters. And then we look at those things in light of the scriptures and explain to the viewer, here's why this stuff matters, and here's why it matters in your life, and here's why it matters in society. So it's a small group curriculum. People can do it individually as well, but it's made generally for a small group to study together. And it's 12 sessions. You can take, you know, 12 weeks. You could fit it within a Sunday school class. But it really is good stuff because it teaches uniquely about what God's story is for us as human beings, why he created us as we did, and how marriage and family really do reflect in wonderful and beautiful ways his nature.
Well, there seems to be a bit of a push to deny that men and women really have any differences or that they are necessary for a family or for raising children. Are male and female gender differences good for a family?
Well, they're absolutely essential. And you mentioned earlier the book Secure Daughters, Confident Sons. That is really what that book is about, is to say, what does it mean to be male and female? And how do male and female complement one another? And how do we take little boys, little girls to grow up to be good men and women? And most importantly, how do moms and dads, as gender, sex distinct parents, do that in unique ways? And we are really radically redefining the family with the same-sex experiment to say that children don't need to be raised by their mother and their father, or a mother and a father, you know, in adoption. They just need two or three, you know, loving adults that just care for them. And there is no research, no data whatsoever that says that any two adults can, as much as they may love that child, can raise a child and that child be, you know, just like a child being raised by their own mother or father.
Well, one of the sections of that book I found interesting, because I am female, of course, is that you wrote girls develop a different kind of confidence from their mom than they do from their dad. Can you talk more about that and how that applies to the subject of having a mother and a father for a child?
Yeah, see, that's very, very important for both boys and girls, that dads give daughters a confidence about themselves as women before men. You know, you look at a young woman who is confident around men, not overly confident or not arrogant, but you know what? They know how to deal with men, their professors, their bosses, things like that. That girl learned from her father how to interact and not be intimidated by the ways of a man. And that father taught her that, I've got four daughters. Honey, you are valuable. You can do anything that you want to do. And you know what? Stand up for yourself. Be confident in who you are. And as a father, you know what? Don't take any guff off of men. Expect them to treat you with dignity, with respect, just like they would, you know, treat any other man, not in terms of treat you as a man, but treat you respectfully that way. Women are the same way. Women can do that very wonderfully in demanding respect from their daughter's father. You know, here's how I expect to be treated by a husband, by a father, by another man. And honey, I want you to see that and to observe that and work in the same way. And we can do that for good or for bad, you know. There are moms, there are wives, just like there are fathers and husbands, that interact with their spouse poorly, you know. And the kids can learn from that, but they can also learn from the positive examples as well. So mothers and fathers build confidence in their children in unique and different ways. If you, just an interesting example of this was a story in USA Today many, many years ago. They were doing a story on these kind of newfangled families, and this was a family of two lesbian moms raising a little boy, and the family included their sperm donor male and his boyfriend. So it was like a four-way family, and, you know, just very interesting. And the journalist asked the four of them, do you guys ever get into disagreements and fights about raising the child? And the biological dad spoke up and he said, yeah, sometimes I have problems when Raymond gets stuck in a problem or he can't figure something out. The moms will go right to his help. And I want them to say, hang back, let him figure it out for himself. Now, what he was talking about there was a male and female mother and father way of doing things. Mothers are more likely to come right to the aid of their children, and they need that. They need to know, you know what, somebody's going to be there for me. Dads, on the other hand, can tend to say, you know what, let him figure it out. Let him, you know, struggle with this a little bit. And that's what that dad was saying. And the journalist asked him, so then what do you do in a situation like that? He said, I'm not the mother. I'm not the ones directly raising this little boy. So I just hold back and I don't say anything. That little boy is being robbed of that kind of training and confidence building that only a father is inclined to give his child. And that's very, very important. And there's 101 other ways that mothers and fathers are different in their parenting, and those differences create essential and necessary developmental experiences for the children, boys and girls.
Say, Glenn, we have someone who's calling in. We have a caller who would like to ask a question, and they are there. Okay, an anonymous caller is calling in to ask a question about her LGBT stance at a university. I think that's it.
Uh-huh.
Caller, are you there?
Yes, I work at a university, and there is an opportunity to be involved in safe zone training, and as a result, you receive like a rainbow sticker to go on your office door. And I always wondered about that and what kind of message that would send, because I want to be strong to my convictions at the same time, be a welcoming place. And I'm wondering if you have any comments about that.
Right. And that is, that is such an important question. And it's a place where I live very much is, if I reject putting that rainbow sticker, which is a political statement, it's an ideological and political statement, if I refuse to put that on my door, does that mean that I can't be, you know, accepting and welcoming? Of course not. And please do not put me in a position where essentially I have to put your bumper sticker on my door or my car in order to be seen as gracious and accepting. It's what it is. It's just a sticker. Let's look at the substance of how I actually treat other people. Let's judge people by that. And that's very important. And it goes back to what we were talking about is, let's have the bigger conversation about what we're doing here, rather than saying, if you don't play along with our kind of political or ideological game, you know, then you're being difficult or even bigoted or hateful. Don't settle for that. Talk about, if there's something that I'm doing with students that you see as problematic, then let's talk about that. But don't judge me because I'm willing or not willing to go along with some, you know, program.
Thanks so much for calling and asking that question. And Glenn, we just have 1 minute left, and I'm wondering if you would just offer just that last piece of advice to someone who's maybe afraid to have a conversation with someone who believes differently than they do. What's just one great piece of advice that you could give, or piece of encouragement that you can give to give someone the courage to actually have those conversations?
Yeah, first of all, I mean, specifically on this issue, the gay and lesbian issue, understand that we can disagree with people all over the place, and it's actually very important for us as Christians to engage those people who believe different things than we do. And we're going to make mistakes. I mean, just as if you, you know, meet somebody from another country, you know, you're going to be nervous about how their names are pronounced and their traditions and things like this. But you struggle through those things, and you do it out of good and honest will. And Christians should do that with gay and lesbian individuals. I say, you know what, absolutely go out and find a gay or lesbian individual and seek to befriend them and do it in honesty. If they don't want to be your friend because you're a Christian, and that's true many times, you know what, just say, Ben, I'm sorry that you can't be my friend, but I would love to be your friend even though you disagree with what I believe.
Ben, thanks so much just for those words of encouragement and for all the wisdom that you share in your book. We're grateful that you joined us on Connecting Faith. And if you've listened, like a podcast of the show, you can go to our website.